This week on the Time Bat Show.
Maybe Neo has to preach to all them.
There you go. Oh, God. Can you imagine everyone getting woken up at the same time? Everyone's in the big vat of goo with the thing in their head, and they're all like, ah! Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 100 and something else. We're at the Time Bat Show. I'm Time Aces.
I'm Bat Snacks.
I forgot how to do the intro this week.
It's okay.
We had a little trouble clapping that time, but that wasn't that bad. Whenever you do, like, whenever you're trying to in sync with somebody to do something, like, if you're late, the next time you do it, do you do it, like, really early? Because that happens to me all the time.
You kind of guess that, yeah. Okay, so I'm off.
Right.
Maybe I'll correct myself by intentionally delaying.
Right, being slower. Because, like, yeah, like, it's a weird thing. But, like, for example, I was doing an escape room last weekend with a group of friends.
Oh, my gosh. Were you?
Well, yeah, I was. Why is this so funny?
I've never done an escape room.
You've never done one?
What on earth is an escape room?
You would really like it. Okay. You would really like it. You remember the Flash games from, like, 2006 or 4, where you, like, clicked on a bunch of things in the room to, like, you wake up in a hotel, and then you have to, like, click on a bunch of things to, like, get out of the room or whatever?
Absolutely. Yeah, do you remember, like, the red room?
Oh,
the
yeah. Flash that game, was
the horror
we
one.
We stayed up till, like, 3 a.m. trying to get out of that thing? Yeah. So escape rooms are, like, real-life versions of that. Okay?
Okay.
Like, you're doing it with a group of people. So you're, like, solving the puzzle together. In this case, it was, like, I think 5 of us, 6 of us, maybe? I don't remember. But anyway, you get in the room, and there's some, like, theme. Like, this one was ancient Egypt. You're trapped in, like, a crypt, an ancient catacombs, and you gotta, like, figure out how to get out using, like, Indiana Jones-style puzzle solving or whatever, right? But a lot of them have just random themes or whatever. Like, there's a lot of secret agent kind of ones and stuff. Mm-hmm. But so you just, like, solve puzzles in the room. There's clues. And you, like, you know, put stuff together and, like, you find combinations to safes and stuff and you open them and they have a key in it that fits this lock over here that opens this thing that gives you a statue that you put in a thing, you know, like Resident Evil, and then it, like, opens this other thing, you know.
Yeah.
You would love it, I think. I think you would love it. But, what were you gonna say? Sorry.
So I have a question. When you do these, do you role play?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, can you hear me?
No. I mean, you certainly can roleplay, but you don't typically. I mean, we don't. I'm sure there exists some that you roleplay in them. You know what I mean? But we didn't in our Egyptian one.
Do you know it'd be really fun?
What?
When I hear you describe this, what comes to mind is, okay, we all need to dress up like the holodeck in Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes.
Everybody goes there dressed up as, like, Sherlock Holmes characters.
Yes.
And they all have, like, fake pipes and weird outfits.
See? That sounds fun!
Yeah.
I want to do... I bet they have themed... I bet they have role-play escape rooms. If they don't, that's a $1 million idea. Like, you can come in, and if you don't have a costume, the escape room will provide you one for a small fee. You know what I mean?
So yeah, yeah. It's like more. Bowling shoes.
Yeah. It's like, you're doing the Sherlock Holmes escape room, so you have to be... You know, here's your Sherlock Holmes get up, here's your Watson thing, you know, or whatever. That's a good idea. But anyway, the escape room has, like, clues and stuff. And there's this one thing that there's these two buttons on the wall, right? And they're far enough apart where, like, you have to hit, like, two people have to hit them at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you both have to hit your button at the same time. Kind of like a launch code in, like, nukes or whatever, you know, turn the key at the same time or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, we needed to do this to, like, start something. And me and the other person do it, and I was, like, way too early. And so I was like, okay. And then, like, we did 3-2-1 again, and then I was, like, really late. Like, super late. But, like, I kept correcting. It took, like, 3 or 4 tries until, like, we got it. Like, we were in mm-hmm. sync. But, like, I was overcorrecting for the other person, and I think they were overcorrecting for me. And what was it? And we were constantly switching if we were late or early. So what I think what was happening is, like, I was like, I was early, but I felt they were late. So I was like, all right, I'm going to be later intentionally. And they were probably like, I'm going to be earlier intentionally. And then we did that and we're wrong. And then we both were probably like, all right, I was late that time. So I'm going to be earlier intentionally. And they were like, oh, I was early that time. So I'm going to be late. And then we just keep going back and forth. But I don't know. Long story for that anecdote. But there you go.
I don't usually do that. But
I don't either. But it's happened to me before. And it's fun.
Now that you mention it, yeah. Like, especially if the person I'm doing it with is a stranger and I can just be like, okay, this person, like, obviously doesn't know how to count.
My situation, because it was with a group of friends that I play D&D with plus one person I've never met anymore or ever before. And that was the person I was doing the button with. So I was like, I don't know your timing personality here. Like, I've never hit a button at the same time with you before. So I don't really know your mental state. Like, maybe this person just doesn't know how to count internally. I don't know. Like, that's a thing, right? I don't know. But yeah, they're fun though. You should do one. It was on a whim. Like, someone texted me at 6 p.m. I was like, do you want to do an escape room? And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it sounds kind of fun. I'd give it a try.
It's expensive though. Like, it's an hour long. Mm-hmm. They give you an hour to escape the room and solve the puzzle, and it's like $50 or something like that. Like, it's maybe wow. 30. No, I think it was $30 a person, which is not small. Like, a not small quantity of money, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of expensive. Like, yeah. Six people, $30. Yeah. That's, I'm not gonna math, but that's
a lot of money.
That's like Xbox-ish territory.
I mean, we all paid for ourselves individually, but I mean, yeah. So you can imagine. And you only have an hour to do it, right? If you don't finish it in the hour, it's like, well, that's it. Good job. You didn't escape. And then they let you out, and then you fail or whatever. But we escaped.
That escape room concierge just kind of bust into your yep. sarcophagus and
they're
be
just like,
sorry.
Hey, sorry, you didn't solve the you know, Universal Indiana Jones puzzle. Goodbye. And then you're like, oh. But we solved it. I don't know. The room we were in had only a 33% chance success rate. So it was pretty exciting that we solved the room. I thought we were really behind. And me thinking we were really behind the whole time made us solve it faster, I think. Because I was like, oh, shit. Because, like, you have a walkie-talkie and you're like, how much time do I have left? Like, the concierge person's, and they're like, you have blah, blah, blah minutes. And one time she said, you have 25 minutes, but I swear she said, like, I swear I heard 15. You know what I mean? Like, I thought I heard 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we only have 15 minutes. And so we rushed, but we solved it. And then we solved it with like 8 minutes to spare. And I thought we had like a second left when we did solve it. So anyway, escape rooms are fun. You should definitely do them. It sounds like something you would enjoy to do with your family. As weird as that sounds, I think it would be fun.
No, that's the kind of stuff we like doing.
Yeah, you would definitely have a really good time with it. Because it's like half of it is you're just running around like a chicken with your head cut off. And the other half is like you're getting together and solving a puzzle. Because there's so many clues that you have to pay attention to it all the time. It's not, it's linear, but it's not, right? It's like each clue leads to a linear thing. But at any one time, you might have like 10 different clues that are leading all these different places. And you'd have to focus on the one that's going to get you the first step. And you don't know what the first step is. So a lot of it is just like, I have this piece of paper with this written on it. What do you have? I've got this other thing with this, you know, with the man's name on it. I've got this thing with musical notes on it. And it's like, okay, what do we do with all this stuff, you know?
So it sounds really fun. I get really into stuff like that. I would do the whole role-playing thing, too, where it's like, okay, you need to call me by Dr. Sherlock Holmes or Watson.
We should do one. We should do one together. We should do one with just the two of us, because most of the time the escape rooms are built for, like, groups of 4 to 6. Because that's the brain power you need to do it. We should do one with like just two of us to see if we could do it. You know what I mean?
This makes me think of like a History Channel style documentary where you pit like two teams against each other in escape rooms.
Why isn't that a reality show right now?
That'd be a really good one.
Right? It's like Ice Road Truckers, but with escape rooms.
You could have Ice Road Truckers be a team.
Yeah.
Like, there's the truckers versus the...
it's just... What's in the Pawn Stars? People. Yeah, or the people that fish for crabs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Those people. This could be the show. It's just all the History Channel original shows. The cast gets together and competes with the other people on the escape room. Ice Road Truckers versus Pawn Stars. And then it's like... the crab fishing people versus like the Shark Week people or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You know. And obviously, you know, during the challenges, you would have the cut to interviews with the different people from the group, and they could be like, wow, Jeremy really screwed us. He was talking too much. He was being way too loud. He wasn't allowing us to focus as a group, really throwing off our vibe.
Yep. He was making too many jokes. That's his personality, though. God, I hate that guy. He's the worst ice road trucker in the group anyway, or whatever. And then sometimes you can have special people from other networks, like Guy Fieri could come down one day.
Oh, he's like a ringer.
He's a ringer. It's the chef group, like Alton Brown, Guy Fieri. What's that other guy's name?
Maybe like Gordon Ramsay could show up.
The guy from Iron Chef America, the host guy, you know.
Yeah.
They're like one group, and then they're pit against like the BattleBot people, you know, the battle robot people. I forget what that show's called. You know what I'm talking about?
Right? Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that would be a sick like combine the History Channel extended universe into one show.
And you just go back like 10 years on the shows. Like the shows don't even have to be on the air anymore. Like Ghost Hunters, yeah, bring those guys in for this. Sure, why not? Right.
What were those, the motor, something, the hog. Choppers? Yeah, the like hog LA choppers. Choppers.
They're in there, they're there. They're for sure in an escape room.
Yeah, I would want to see just a huge outburst between the father and the son, like they're getting just really yelling mad. At
each other, like, you fucking didn't open the lock. And it's like, yes, I did, I opened it. And they're like, well, why isn't it open now? They would go against the Pawn Stars. I think you gotta similarly level the playing field here, you know?
Yeah.
You can't have like the MIT BattleBot people go up against the American Chopper people. You know, you gotta get them go up with like the Pawn Stars or something, you know. Level it out, right?
You never know. That could be kind of, do you remember the movie Armageddon? Like you would never expect a group of just these everyday drillers.
It's a movie though, right?
But think about it. They could use what they learned in their time in drilling to solve the escape room. What? Maybe that works better than all this MIT smartness.
A puzzle, and there's like a chest. You have to open the lock, and the MIT people are like, all right, the combination we have to use, the Fibonacci sequence to divide out the factors, and then use that to get the combination. And like the American Chopper people were like, I'm going to hit it with a wrench. And the wrench probably works better. Yeah. So there you go.
You like break the room and get fined.
That's what they said. We played it. There was a really long video before we started. And I swear it was 5 minutes. 4 out of the 5 minutes were just don't do this. Like, don't break anything. Don't pick anything up that's nailed to the floor. Like, it was just don't do all these things. And it was clearly there because people have done all this stuff in the things before. So they definitely don't want you doing that. But yeah, escape rooms. I would recommend it. You should definitely do it with your family or somebody. And if you don't do it, next time I see you, I bet they have them where you live or wherever we will be, and we're going to do one together because it'll be fun.
They do. There's a place around here. They have like Legend of Zelda ones and stuff like that.
Sometimes I get really mad at them because I've done a few, and like sometimes the clues aren't like logical enough. You know what I mean? Like there's not enough of a logical connection between clue A and clue B or whatever, but that's just me as an annoyed person. But they're cool. God, that was a long tangent, and we didn't even start the show yet, really. The first topic I wanted to talk about, this was like because my internet was fluctuating before the show started, is do you have a phrase that you use to Google to like check to see if your internet is working? Like, what's your go-to Google to check to see if your internet is working?
I don't use Google. I do the...
Okay, what do you do to check to see your internet?
Command prompt.
You go into the CMD or whatever.
Yeah, and I ping the 8888.
You would do that. I should have known that's what you do. You don't Google like a normal person. You ping yourself.
Yeah.
And when do you get back? It like gets like a millisecond response time or whatever?
Yeah, as long as it doesn't fail. Over 100, there's something wrong, but...
So you don't open your browser. You open the command prompt and you ping something. What is 8888?
That's Google's DNS server. That's a good one because they usually don't go down.
So you don't Google anything, but you ping Google.
Yeah.
So we're both using Google as like our, is the internet working? We're just using it in different ways.
Yeah.
You're pinging it, and I'm typing hey into my browser.
Now, after I do the ping, that doesn't always mean your internet's working. So sometimes you do still have to open a browser, and I'll usually go to like, my go-to is CNN.com for some reason.
Why?
And I have a good reason. It's okay, because probably. They're constantly changing your page, so none of it will be catched. So
oh,
like,
they're
you don't
reloading?
Get like a false, yeah, you don't get a false positive.
Oh, so like if you went to some other site, it could be cached and like it could be showing you something that's loaded already, like
yeah.
Yesterday or something like that. Okay, that's legitimate. That makes sense. Yeah, my go-to is boring. It's just I type hey into Google and then it comes back to me. And the annoying thing with that is it comes up, the first thing that comes up is like some dumb music video called Hey, the music video.
And do you see the music video every time?
I mean, I don't watch it, but I see the thumbnail of it every time I type hey. So I'm looking for like a new phrase, you know what I mean, to Google.
Have you ever watched the Hey music video? You
no,
should check
I have
that
not.
Out. You've probably been seeing this video for a long time. You
for like
see what
years. Like for yeah. 3 years I've been seeing this music video and I'm like, oh, okay, my internet's working. There's the Hey music video. But then I get paranoid and I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe my internet isn't working. My computer has just cached the Hey Google search page with the music video so well that because I've searched for it so many times. So then I'll usually search for something else, just make sure it's working. But yeah, I should watch the Hey music video. I'll
you
give
should.
You a review next week. How about that?
That sounds good.
I'm not watching it right now because screw that.
There was this one time I was just hanging out at my house and I wanted to listen to music, but I was tired of all the music that I knew about. Mm. So just kind of on a whim, I Googled play me some music. And there's a video that pops up of a reggae song called Play Me Some Music. It's pretty good.
You liked it?
I really liked it, yeah.
That's cool. Music is a weird thing to discover these days because, like, I don't know, it's really hard. Because on one hand, it's easier to discover cool music than it ever has been because of the internet. And on the other hand, it's harder because there's nobody recommending stuff to you anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you're on your own, kind of. You have to, like, go find it. Whereas, like, back in the day, you had the radio, and you had people that were like, hey, here's music. And you're like, oh, I like this. But now you have to, like, literally, like, Google, give me music like this. And then the internet's like, here. You know, you have to make the effort now, which, I don't know, it's hard sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and when it comes to people recommending music, usually when people recommend me music, I just don't want to see what their recommendations are. Because,
yeah.
I mean, not because I don't like the people or anything, but it's like, okay, that's your music, though. I want to enjoy my music. I don't want to enjoy your music.
Like, the most exciting thing, like, in the world for me is when I accidentally stumble across some music that I, like, really, really like. And it was, like, completely by accident. Like, oh, what the hell is that? And then, like, I go down a rabbit hole and then I find out. And then I'm like, yes, I found something cool. And it's, like, really exciting. But it doesn't happen a lot with people recommending because people just don't recommend music very often anymore. And if they do, it's, like, stuff that I've either already heard about or I know I'm not going to like it because it's, like, pop or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? And it's like, ugh, what are you going to do? But
Does recommend you music, it's like that can't become your song because it's their song already.
People have recommended me good stuff. But I have to, like, seek it out. I have to be like, hey, you like music, recommend me stuff. You know, people don't go out of their way to be like, hey, Chris, you like music, here's something you'd like. That doesn't happen. You know, I'd like that too. But, like, you have to ask for people for their recommendations and they'll give it to you. And then it's only based on stuff that they already like, not stuff that they think you'll like, which I think is the key.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I'm going to go recommend music to you, I'm going to think about the kind of music you like. And then think about the kind of music I know and try to give you something that you'll like, you know?
That's the right way.
Yeah. Whereas normally it's just like, I like this. Here's a song. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. Or it's like, I don't like this, but I think you'll think I'm cool if I say I do.
See, that's the worst.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing. I think you'll think I'm cool by recommending this. And then you're like, wow, you listen to blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, I do.
It's like, ooh, I really like Tool. I like how they're all like...
Lateralis all like or whatever.
Dark and...
progressive and shit. It's always Tool, isn't it? That's like the penultimate music nerd joke. Like, have you heard Tool? Do you know about Tool and their album? A Perfect Circle or whatever. Do you want to do the first trivia question?
Sure. So your first trivia question is about movies. Which lifeline will you pick?
I feel like I'm pretty good with movies. I will pick 50-50 on this one.
Okay. First question is, which actor born today in 1973... played the lead role in the 36th Chamber of Shaolin and was in both Kill Bill movies? So 36th Chamber of Shaolin, lead role, and he was in both Kill Bill movies.
When was he born?
1973.
Okay, ready.
Okay. Is it A, Donnie Yen? Is it B, Jet Li? Is it C, Gordon Liu? Or is it D, Jackie Chan?
I don't think Jackie Chan was in the Kill Bill movies. I feel like I would remember that. I'm leaning on Donnie Yen or Jet Li, just because those are the two names I recognize. I don't know what the third guy's name is.
Gordon Liu.
Gordon Liu.
L-I-U.
Liu. I think it's just Liu. I mean, Liu. I'm being really racist right now.
No, you're not.
I don't know how to pronounce Asian people's names. Gordon Liu. I'm going to use my 50-50.
Okay. It is either Donnie Yen or Gordon Liu.
Donnie Yen or Gordon Liu. See, it could be Gordon Liu, and I just don't know who the hell that is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I know who Donnie Yen is. I don't know if he's been in both of those movies, but I know who he is. So my stupid logic is go with what I know, Donnie Yen, final answer.
Donnie Yen is incorrect.
Damn
it's
it.
Gordon
it's
Liu.
Gordon Liu. I don't even know who that is. It's the guy from Kill Bill.
I think if you saw him, you'd recognize him. It's do you remember Pai Mei, the old guy with the wispy beard?
Yes, it's that guy.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would recognize him, but I didn't know that's what his name. They all look the same. Just kidding. Just kidding. I'm kidding. Speaking of fighting movies, did you hear about they're making a new Matrix movie?
Yes, I heard.
Yeah, are you excited?
That's no.
Yes, I heard. Why are you excited? You love the Matrix movies.
I love the Matrix.
The Matrix 1.
Yeah, I don't like the Matrix movies.
How do you feel about Reloaded and the other one, Revelations?
I don't remember really anything about them. They're just not my kind of movies.
So what I remember about Reloaded is there's a really long fight scene on a highway. Do you remember that part?
Yeah. It's
like
raining.
it's like half the movie. No, not the raining one. That's the one in Revelations. So okay. Revelations is the one where Neo fights like 20 Mr. Smiths or like 100 on the rain on a road in the dark while raining. I just said raining twice. Yeah, like that was Revelations. You remember that scene, right?
Yeah.
It's like really long. And then there's one in the Reloaded where they're like on the freeway and like it's like kind of a car chase. And then like they jump out of the car and like fight in the air and stuff.
Oh,
and then the cars
I
blow up. And then that is like literally half of the movie. Like I swear it's like a 45-minute scene, like this car chase scene. But I remember really liking that when I watched it as like a 17-year-old. I don't know what happened in the rest of the movie, but I liked the car chase scene a lot.
Yeah.
So that's all I remember about Reloaded. And then all I remember about Revelation is two things. One, like you said, the rain thing with a million Mr. Smiths. And the old guy that's the architect that looks like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah. Just the like 20-minute long like exposition dump where he's just like
and he's like got monitors behind him and he's just talking slowly and you're like, wow, this is a movie, all right.
But yeah, I don't know, I didn't really enjoy the other two personally.
So they're bringing back everybody, it sounds like, from the original ones.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So it could be good.
No, I don't think it will be.
What do you think they're going to go with? What do you think would be a good Matrix movie, like reboot thing? You know what I mean?
I tried to think about this today, mm-hmm. just kind of while I was at work. Like, and
Write me your best Matrix movie really fast.
I can tell you what I think they'll do.
What do you think they'll do?
So at the end of Revelations, I think we ended with, so Neo's the god in the Matrix,
yeah.
right? He mm-hmm. can like turn water into wine and stuff and do all that crap.
Yes.
And they're like going to fight the machines, right?
Yeah, right.
But Neo, I don't remember, could he extend his powers to the real world yet?
I think he could, because there's a scene in like Reloaded, and this scene sticks out of my head where they're running from the robots that like kill them, and right. Neo is outside of the Matrix, and he like puts his hand up and they like fall down, and Trinity's like, what the fuck, or whatever, right? So yeah. he definitely could. They didn't show a lot of it in the movies, but he could do it. He could extend.
Yeah. So kind of going with that, what I think they'll do is Neo is going to become like Marvel Comics superhero.
So they're going to make like the Matrix cinematic universe at this
yeah.
point.
Neo is going to become Matrix Man.
Oof. And oof. I do not want to see that movie.
And he'll be like a really good hacker. And he has amazing powers in the computer program, but he can also extend his powers to reality.
Okay, this is not the Matrix anymore, right? Like,
no.
The cool thing about the Matrix, the first movie, is it's so self-contained. And it has, like, it's a really cool action movie, but it has this really cool story of a guy escaping, like, this fake world into the real world, you know what I mean? And like,
yeah,
that's cool, and you can really only do that one time, right? Yeah. And as we learned from the sequels, so having a fourth movie just do like the same thing the sequels did is kind of really boring to me, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's the same thing they already did then. Like, Neo was already Matrix yeah. Man, so if he was just doing all that
he's
crap,
just better Matrix Man now.
Yeah.
Like, what is he going to fight now, you know?
Maybe now they'll get him a jumpsuit and a cape, like...
The only thing I could think, maybe they're going to try to, like, mass eject the humans from the Matrix, you know what I mean, at the same time, or something like that.
Okay.
Like, that could make for an interesting movie, maybe. Like, mass jack everyone out of the Matrix. I feel like that would cause a lot of chaos, but they could do it.
So maybe they mass jack people out of the Matrix, and since people aren't ready to face the real world and it's really terrible, there's maybe some people that don't like being in the real world and they fight to go back in the Matrix.
Oh, they would definitely want to get back in, you know?
Yeah.
I would want to go back in.
Yeah, me too.
No, but I wouldn't. Maybe I would. I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
I think that seems like a Wachowski kind of plot, too, because
right?
it's... That's kind of, yeah. it parallels where we're at right now in society. Like, people would rather be...
Comfort than reality.
Comfort than yeah. reality.
Yeah, no, that's true. That could be an interesting plot. The problem with that is, like, how do you make that exciting for Neo? Because he's still the main character, right?
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe Neo has to preach to all them.
There you go. Oh, God. Can you imagine everyone getting woken up at the same time? Everyone's in the big vat of goo with the thing in their head. And they're all like, ah! And like everyone's just screaming at the same time. You know? That would be frightening. You wake up, you look around, you're in goo, you're naked, you got all these holes in your body, you got this thing in the back of your neck. You peek through the glass of your container, and you see like millions of other humans doing the same thing. And then you all just scream at the same time. You know,
I mean, that's a cool scene, isn't it?
If that was all the Matrix 4 was, I would go watch it. You know what I mean? Like, the movie is just them releasing the people, and then that scene, and then end credits. That's it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that I would love that movie too. That's the right. beginning of the movie. The opening shot is someone waking up. Everyone just goes ballistic, and then. You cut to Neo. He's just like, hey, I'm Neo. And then Trinity's there. She's like, hey, I'm Trinity. And then end movie.
It's like a 3-minute movie.
Yeah.
You know, I would pay money to see that just because I would be so happy about it afterwards. You know what I mean?
I'd be like, whoa, did you see that part where they all go, ah!
Where they're all freaking out. They're like, oh my God, oh my God. Oh, it's a wonder no one has made a movie like that yet, where it's like a fake out, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to this movie and it's like an hour and a half, but it's actually like 3 minutes. People would want their money back. That's the problem with that.
But you already have their money.
But I would love that. Like, for the I would love that. I would be so down for that movie. But they could redeem it, so they could make the stupid movie they're making with, like, the stupid Goku fight scenes and stuff, like, yeah, leading up to the point where they're releasing everyone. Mm-hmm. And then when they do release everyone, have the screaming scene, and then end it right there. Then I could forgive a lot of the rest of the movie if they had that scene at the end. Like, if they ended it with that, I mean, that the movie would go up, in my opinion, like, grade-wise, if they ended with that. Like, even if the rest of it was really dumb.
My only problem with that is that's a big cliffhanger, and that just means get ready for Matrix 5, everybody.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I think it's such a good ending because I don't want to see the rest of that. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, well, they succeeded, and everyone is really, really freaking out, and just use your imagination of what happens next. Because it's bad, you know. People would be revolting. The problem, I think, with a lot of movies with cliffhangers like that is, like you said, they're like, oh, you got to make a sequel now. But the sequels of that are always boring because you know what's going to happen. The beauty of an ending like that is it tells you everything that's about to happen with these people without showing any of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know that half of these people are going to, like, try to get back in. You know that, like, a third of them are probably going to commit suicide. And, you know, the rest are going to be, like, trying to control their lives while they're spinning under control, you know? Like,
and each other.
Yeah, and you don't need to see that. But that's the beauty of an ending like that. But if they made a Matrix 5, they would show that. And you'd be like, well, I already knew this was going to happen. Like, why am I watching this movie?
Yeah, you know? So that's cool. Yeah, we could just watch that and then skip the Matrix 5, and it's a win.
I mean, they'd make one anyway, but
yeah,
unless the fourth one didn't make any money. But I don't know. I'll see Matrix 4 because I like the original Matrix a lot, and I like Keanu, and I like Carrie Ann Moss, and I like the Wachowskis, and I like Lawrence Fishburne. Blah blah blah.
Here's another interesting thing about this movie: only one of the Wachowskis is making it.
Really.
It's only, I think Lana is the one making it. So Lily
is not involved?
Lily Wachowski gave her blessings on the project, but is not going to be involved with it at all.
Wow, that's weird.
Which, they've never not worked on a movie together.
I wonder what happened. Maybe she's just tired of making movies.
Or maybe, you know, there was an interview a while back where they were both like, yeah, we're not going to make another sequel to The Matrix. Like, we don't want to just, you know, Hollywood already releases too many sequels. Right. There's not enough original properties.
Now they're doing it.
Well, maybe, one of them is.
Maybe Lana was running out of money. And Hollywood was like, hey, you want some more money? And she's like, all right, I'll do it. Yeah. You know? I mean, that's what happens, right? It's like, it's free money at that point. Maybe.
And Lily's like, I'm good. You go
maybe
right
she,
ahead.
But she has a better accountant or something, and she's like, I'm good. I don't need any money. I don't need more money. So, I mean, she'll still make some probably because of royalties. Like, it's still an IP that she owns part of, so she'll probably make some just not by not doing anything. You know what I mean?
So, but not like that. $100 million.
No. But she'll probably make a percentage of it because she owns part of the IP or whatever. So, I don't know. I'll watch it. We'll see what happens. Man, Keanu
isn't that
Reeves
interesting about the Wachowskis? How they do everything together. I was looking at this today, and you know their Wikipedia page? They don't have individual Wikipedia pages.
They just have
pages.
One page.
It's just the Wachowskis.
Yeah, because they work together all the time. They're going to need an individual one now because Lana's doing the Matrix 4 and the other one isn't. Lily isn't doing it.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, that is wild.
I'm going to see it. We should see it. We should both see it, like, opening night. I don't even know when it's coming out. I think it just started production.
Yet.
So, probably not for a while. Anyway, what are you going to do? You got to log into the Matrix is what you got to do.
Speaking of the Matrix and, you know, living in a simulation and a computer program and all that, I had a topic I wanted to talk about because I did something like this recently.
Tell me all about it.
So, do you ever do random stuff that you wouldn't normally do to prove to yourself that you have free will?
I do, but I don't know if we're thinking of the same thing. Give me an example.
So, recently, I was at Walmart, and I was going through the frozen foods aisle.
Okay.
And I saw the grossest looking popcorn shrimp in like a family sized 5-pound bag ever.
And you bought it.
And I was, no, I'm thinking to myself, look, I would never buy this.
Right.
Like, this would never happen. Never in my whole life would I look at that and be like, you know what? I'm going to spend $3 on this 5 pounds of gross shrimp.
Right.
And I bought it.
But you're like, no, I'm proving to myself that I am free. I'm buying this shrimp. Have you eaten the shrimp?
I ate half the bag in one sitting. They were terrible. But, like, again, I'm on a mission at this point to prove, you know what?
That's
I'm
good.
Not living in the Matrix.
That's good.
I'm real.
Now, here's the thing that, because I've done this before. I've never bought a gross bag of shrimp to prove that I am real. Maybe I'll get there one day. I don't know. But sometimes when I'm alone, I'll make random gestures or something. But that doesn't really count because I feel like that's just part of my weird personality coming out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like everyone in the bathroom makes weird faces in the mirror. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of a situation I have done something I haven't, like I would normally do, wouldn't normally do to prove. And I feel like I've done it. The problem is that couldn't you just think that, you know, like, deterministically, your brain is going to have that thought, and to correct it, it's going to do something it wouldn't normally do to prove to yourself that you have free will when you actually don't.
Yeah, it's a trap, for sure.
It's a trap. It's a mental trap.
But you know what? Here's the thing, and I considered this.
Yeah.
Those shrimp were really gross.
They were, like, really bad.
They were, like, really gross.
There should be, like, a name for this, like, this phenomena that you do. It's like the shrimp paradox or something like that, you know, because you're using something really nasty to prove that you're a real person, right?
Yeah,
you know,
to prove that you have control over your destiny. Over you can do whatever life. You want. Hey, you want to buy some terrible frozen food? You can do it.
Do you believe that we have free will?
I don't know,
this is a really heady topic, but you got into it.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
What are you leaning towards? Like if you had to give a percent chance that we had free will versus not free will?
Percent? I don't know. I think it's more complicated than that. I don't know if it's strictly one or the other.
It's a weird to talk about free will in terms of probability because, like, it's not something you can quantify as probability. Like, I remember seeing this study. And a bunch of scientists were like, yeah, I think we're living in a simulation. You've probably seen this before, right? A lot of people think we're living in a simulation. Have you seen this? And they started giving it like statistical percents. Like, I think there's a 10% chance we're living in a simulation. And my point is like, if we're living in a simulation, the percent chance, like statistics that we know, like has like means absolutely nothing because they're isolated to our simulation, right? Yeah. So, like, if there was a world outside of the simulation, statistics could work completely different there. So, you can't apply internal probability to external probability. It doesn't make any sense. And I feel like it's the same thing with free will, right?
You could say there's 100% probability they made that shit up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like, I guess my question is, which way do you lean? Do you lean more free will or do you lean more deterministic?
You know? I lean to like a weird place in the middle where there's not really choices, but different things can happen.
There's different outcomes.
Yeah.
There's different potential outcomes.
But I don't know that we have any control over
it. I've walked a really weird path with free will. Like when I was younger, I was very convinced that free will was a thing. You know what I mean? Because like, you know, you listen to Rush or whatever. And, you know, you get really convinced that you are in control of your destiny and all that stuff. You know, as I've gotten older, you realize everything is so random, like all the time. And no matter what you do, even if you make your best efforts, like, you're still rolling the dice all the time. Everything is so random and influenced by all these other things that are happening at the same time that I almost don't feel like we have free will anymore. Like, I'm almost positive that it's just deterministic, because whatever I do is influenced by external sources and my brain, but the external sources are influenced by other external sources, which are influenced by other external sources, and then there's just a big chain of influence, and it's all influence in itself, and it's all, like, the outcome is completely impossible to predict, but yeah. It's deterministic, I think, because I don't know how else it could go, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I don't feel like it can be strictly deterministic, just because of how many possibilities there are. Like, I think there's some weird, like, you can't, because in a deterministic system, you can predict the end state.
Well, given that you have enough computational power, you can, right?
Yeah.
I just think we have too many variables to even possibly predict the end state.
Yeah. I think even infinite computer power, though, you can't solve all that. So
where do you think the variance would come from, though? Because you're saying there's, like, multiple outcomes. Like, well, what's determining the multiple outcomes? You know? Like, how is it getting from... Is it some, like, weird quantum thing where it's just, like, randomly
that's exactly one what or I something? Think it is. Yeah.
So it's just some weird random thing that's picking one thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that deterministic too, though? Isn't, like... Can't you predict what the random thing is going to be? Or no? You see what I'm saying?
I think it can be, it's one of those things where it can be both, and since it can be both, it's not one or the other.
Yeah, that's true. I need to buy a gross bag of shrimp right now.
Yeah.
I need to do it.
Well, I did it for you. Kind of, you don't have to do it, because, like, I already proved that we have free will.
You proved that you have free will. You didn't prove I have free will.
Oh, true.
Those are two separate things. Okay. I need to do this individually. You know what I need to do? I need to go, this would be mine. I would go to a restaurant that I really like fast food. I'd go to Whataburger, and I'd buy, like, the grossest thing on the menu that I've never gotten before, like the fish sandwich or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Because I would never in a million years would I get that. And also, never in a million years would I get that because I would have to go to Whataburger to get it, and I love Whataburger. If I'm going to Whataburger, I'm going to get something I want. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get the fish sandwich. Unlike the Walmart thing, you're already at Walmart for other things, you know?
True, yeah. When in Rome.
Like, Whataburger, I would have to, like, literally go there, not get anything I like, and instead get this thing that I know I'm going to hate. That would be my thing.
But here's the thing. You have to eat it, too. You can't just buy it to prove you have free will. You actually have to eat it, because, like, you would never eat the Whataburger fish sandwich.
I haven't eaten dinner tonight, but I think I'm going to do that after this podcast is over.
Can we do it together? I want to go to Whataburger with you and be like, I'll have the fish. Like, can you give me the fish?
Do they even have fish at Whataburger? I don't even know. Even if they don't, we have to ask for it. Like, can I get the fish? And they're like, we don't have that. It's like, just make it. Make it.
Can you get some?
All right, I'll save it for when we're hanging out.
Okay.
We can get the Whataburger fish sandwich together. It's like the seafood principle. Like, if you're gonna get bad seafood instead of something good, that's how you know you've proven you have free will. At least you've proven to yourself in that moment that you have it.
Exactly. Do you want to do the second trivia?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay, your second trivia is about sports.
I know nothing about sports, except golf. I know surprisingly a lot about golf. I'm going to go with Monty Hall as my lifeline.
All right, your question is, between 1990 and 1920, which of these was an Olympic event?
Okay.
Was it A, tug of war?
Wait, what were the dates again? Sorry.
1900 and 1920.
Okay, got it.
Is it A, tug of war? Is it B, cheese rolling? Is it C, chess boxing?
Uh-huh.
Or is it D, extreme ironing?
I hope it's cheese rolling, but I don't think it is. I mean, only one of these sounds like it could be, and that's tug of war. Because, I mean, that sounds like a sport that they could have had at the Olympics. Cheese rolling sounds like something they do in like Switzerland at like a fair, you know, and they give you a prize, but yeah. Not an Olympic sport. Chess boxing is a real thing, but I don't know if that would be an Olympic sport because it has chess, and that's not really athletic, but it could be.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then extreme ironing? I don't even know what that is. Is that like ironing clothes?
Maybe.
You're not going to give me any
information. I can't give you a hint. I can tell you afterwards
what I think. Extreme ironing.
Yeah.
That could be something to do with like using an iron of some kind to do something. Like that could be an Olympic sport. I don't know what you do with the iron, but you're like throwing it or something. I don't know. Like horseshoes, right? Like you throw an iron and another guy catches it and he throws it somewhere else and then you hit it a post and you win. That would hurt. Throwing an iron.
Like a dance routine or something?
No, so I'm imagining, like, this is a sport. I'm imagining. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Do you know, like, the relay race?
Oh, yeah.
Or no, mm-hmm. Do they use a baton with that? Right?
Are you talking about the race where you carry the egg and then the next guy carries the
No, I'm talking
fish.
About this is a real Olympic sport. You carry a baton and you run. And then the next guy is in front of you, and he like kind of runs as you run and grabs the baton, and you keep going, and you do it like four times. It's like I think it's a relay race. So you just
I've seen that. Yeah.
It's four people, but one person's running at a time, and you're just running and passing the baton. So my extreme ironing is that. Okay, same thing. Instead of a baton, you're holding an iron. Okay.
Okay.
And here's where it gets tricky. You don't have to hand the iron off if you don't want to. You can throw the iron at the next person. But the farther you throw it, the more velocity it's going to pick up. And the more it's going to hurt the person. And they have to catch it. If it hits the ground, you lose.
Yeah, you're out of here.
And that's the sport. I just invented it. Doesn't that sound fun?
That sounds like a really good sport, actually.
Right?
Because you have to weigh risk-reward. Like, if you're behind in the race, you can be like, all right, guy in last, you're going to have to catch this.
Yeah, good luck. Hail Mary. That's why you always put the guy in last. Like, maybe your team wants to put the fastest guy in last, but maybe your team wants to put the slowest guy with, like, the toughest hands in last.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That could be a new strategy, you know?
You have different roles. So there's what? Like there's five people on a team, right?
Sure.
You need two kind of like just really fast people that can't catch very good. Those are the first two in line.
Right. They're going to hand off to each other.
Yeah. Then you've got people that they can catch it.
They're like switch.
Yeah, that's the role. Yeah, switches. And then the last guy, he's the...
He's the hands.
He's... And there you have it. That's your typical extreme ironing team.
And then you got to make the choice. Like, the third and fourth guy are the most important because they're the ones that are making the call of whether or not to throw or whether or not to hand off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm imagining you can wear gloves, but they have to be, like, very specific Olympic gloves. Like, they can't really take a lot of the force. Like, they just have to be there to, like, not have your hands get cut up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Extreme ironing. I would watch this sport. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's risk. It's kind of there's different strategies you can pick.
You could die.
You could.
How heavy do you think the iron would be? Like, it would be probably the size of a baton, but like made out of like a wrought iron, right? Like,
yeah,
probably so, like 20 like pounds. Yeah, 10, 20 pounds or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that would hurt if you missed that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's Olympic regulation iron. See, like, minor leagues, they can use, like, a five-pound iron.
To, like, get used to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like this. Do you think there should be anything else to the game? Like, is it just using the relay race thing, or is there, like, any obstacles or anything? I'm kind of digging the simplicity of you know, what I've laid out already. You know?
Yeah, I think if you add obstacles, it just becomes like a circus. Yeah. Like this,
it's not a sport anymore. It's like it's something else. And you've got like the coach being like, throw, throw. Like he's calling the play or whatever.
Yeah.
And like you would do it. It's all about time, right? So like if the guy before you, like if Jamaica beat you and you're Iceland, you know, they got a really good time and you're Iceland and you're next and you're like, well, we got to make up for this. So we should try to we should try to throw at three or four. You know what I mean? But, you know, it depends on the performance of the other teams. Interestingly, the teams that go first are probably at a disadvantage because they don't know the times of the other teams. Okay. You know, and the teams that go last know the times so they can know if they need to take risk. You know what I mean?
So there's a couple different formats you can do, I guess. You could do the heat system, you know, where everybody does a run.
Right.
And maybe your best... run out of three
yeah.
or something
uh-huh.
is the one you use.
Yeah.
Or you could do blind races where no one knows the other person's time.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, you just compare them all.
Maybe, this might be cool. So you do blind racing. You know the standings before you run your race, but you don't know what their times are.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, oh, I know this guy's in front. But I don't know how far in front. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think being able to analyze this makes this more entertaining too. So maybe blind is not the most entertaining way to do it.
Yeah, because it's kind of cool to have a risk reward of like, yeah. Oh, that guy ran really fast. Let's chuck it this time.
Now we have to make up for it. Yeah.
So maybe you could do one where it's like, you do it twice. You do it once where you're in like last, and then once where you're first. You could like do it a number of times to make it so that everyone has like. Like an advantage, you know what I mean? At one point, you know, mm-hmm. see what I'm saying? I don't know. So you could do a heat system, basically, but you invert the order. You shuffle okay. the order every time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like it's sort of like skateboarding or ice skating or something.
Same kind of deal. Yep. Yeah, extreme ironing. Oh, I'm sorry. We got sidetracked on that amazing new sport that I just invented.
It's okay.
I'm going to use Monty Hall on this one.
Okay.
I think I'm going to lock in... God, do I want to lock in extreme ironing or cheese rolling? I'm going to lock in cheese rolling because extreme ironing still could... I feel like that could still be a sport, potentially. So cheese rolling. I'm locking it in for... Not my answer for Money Hall.
Okay. It is either cheese rolling or tug of war.
Okay, I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to go with tug of war.
Okay, tug of war is correct.
Whew. I would have been so excited if you said tug of war is incorrect, and then I could Google cheese rolling as an Olympic sport.
And it's exactly what you pictured. It's just a Swedish guy rolling a block of cheese down a hill.
How do you score with this? Is it just speed?
Speed? You know? Maybe.
you have to maintain control of the cheese while you're rolling it down.
Maybe freestyle cheese rolling.
You like do tricks. You're doing tricks while you're rolling the cheese. You jump up and clap your legs or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you'd have to... It'd be like dribbling a basketball, right? Like, there was a ref watching you, and you need to constantly be maintaining control of the cheese while you're rolling it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're out.
Yeah. You could be like, nope, you're traveling. That's
yeah, penalty. You let the cheese roll two rotations without putting your hand on it. You're out. You know, that would be called traveling. And it's like a really big block of cheese. Like a wheel of cheese, I guess.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. Do you want to do some Reddit? Oh, I had a rant that I wanted to go on before we did the Reddits. So my wife has a computer, and my other computer hasn't been working, so I've been using my wife's computer. Remember back in, I don't know, 2003, when Windows was back in Windows ME or XP or whatever the hell it was? You remember what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And... You could make users real easy. You just, you know, you're like, oh, I'm a user. Click, click, click. Now I'm there, right? You probably know all about this because of your work. But I tried to make a new user for my wife's computer like a few days ago. And I spent like an hour trying to figure out how to do it. I'm not going to lie. And
is it like Windows 10?
Yeah, it's Windows 10.
Yeah, they don't make it easy.
And the reason I realized it was so... There was an easy way to do it. I just didn't know it. So, like, you go on the system thing, and there's no, like, obvious, like, add new user. You have to, like, I had to Google it. Whenever I have to Google how to do something on Windows, they failed as an experience, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I finally figured out where to do it, And then it was like, add family member or add other user. And I was like, well, I don't want to be an other user. I'm going to be a family member because I am a family member. So I click on that, and they're like, oh, you need a Windows account, a Microsoft account. And I was like, okay, I think I have one of those already. So I type it in, and I put it there, and I hit it. And then I like, it's like, all right, I sent you an email. And I'm like, all right. So I go to my email, and then I like click the email, and then I have to hit verify. And then it sends me to a website where I have to, like a Microsoft website, where I have to verify that it's me. And then I do that. And after I did that, now all of a sudden, instead of adding me to her computer, it's made me the Microsoft guy of the computer, if you know what I mean. So I had to like undo that. I don't remember how I undoed it. And then I had tried to add the family member again, and it wouldn't work anymore because I had to go through the email to do it. And it's, I spent like 30 minutes doing this, and then I just gave up, and I was like, screw it, I'll add other user. And then that's the old way, where it's just like, type in your name, and then it's like, boom, you're done. But my point is, I feel like as a society, we've become completely obsessed with logging into things in the most convoluted frickin' ways you can imagine. Where it's like, do you want to do this? Where 10 years ago, it used to be like, click, click, you're done. Now it's like, click, all right, what's your email? What's your password? We're sending you a verification email that you need to click and input your mother's maiden name, and then you need to put your phone number in so we can send you a text, so you can text back the verification phone code to yourself, take a screenshot of it, and then input it into your browser, and then your browser will connect you back to your Microsoft Windows account, and then we'll like do some other thing, and you need a USB drive, and you're like, there's like 20 steps.
Yeah, there's a reason like they do it. No, there's a really good reason.
It's for security. I'm aware.
No, that's not why they do it.
It's not? What is the reason?
No, they want you to have a Windows account to use a Windows computer. If they just let you make a local user, then they can't have your data because they have no way of pinning your identity to
you. I am so tired of having an account for everything. I don't know when society is going to reach critical mass of having accounts, but literally, I have thousands of accounts, and I don't want any of them. Like, I don't want any of them, but I have
them. But they really want you to have one, no, because it makes getting your data so much easier.
I just hate it. We talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, but it's basically that. It's really convenient for them, and it's really inconvenient for us, the end user.
And it's inconvenient for you by design. Like, the process of creating a local user in Windows 10 is so hidden that it would take, like, 30 minutes of searching. You have to click, like, the perfect buttons that are not obvious.
Because they don't want you doing it that way.
No, they don't want you doing it that way. It's the same with apps. Like, it's not just Windows. Have you tried to set up a new iPhone recently? It's like, log into your Apple ID.
I had to go to the store to do it because I didn't know how to do it. Yeah.
You can set up an iPhone without logging into an Apple ID or not having an Apple identity yet.
But they really want you to have one.
It's hard to the point where they don't have yes and no options, and they bold the ones that are like, use what we want.
They're driving you to do it their way, which is really annoying way to do it. And it's kind of inconvenient, but they need your data.
Yeah.
God, I just don't know when we're going to be like, all right, we've had enough. Let's not do this anymore.
Yeah, it's such a stupid design principle. It's like, okay, so we can't take away the option to do this, but maybe if we make it hard enough, people will just stop.
If we make it really stupid, then people will just not do it anymore.
Yeah.
And we are doing it the stupid other way, which is almost as stupid. It's convoluted, but not as convoluted. But it's like neither are good at the end of the day. But I'd rather have the easier way. They just don't. They just hide it. I just don't want to have a million accounts. Like every time I want to do something, you need an account. Like I don't need an account. I'm my own account. Let me use myself.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we need like blood or whatever.
State IDs, man.
Yeah, fucking, that's crazy. All right, I don't need to rant about this. We had a whole episode on this. I just wanted to rant because it was annoying.
No, I feel you. I deal with it every day, and they just keep making it harder. I swear, the person that just makes it so that you can use a device without giving them your mom's phone number is going to make $1 trillion.
And I will be there day one because that's like what I want. Yeah.
Do you know, I think about this all the time. Like, you start using a new app on your phone, and it literally says, give me your mom's phone number.
like immediately. First thing it does.
Do you know what I would do if a person asked me that? I would lose my mind.
You'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? Get the hell out of here.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm not giving you my mom's phone number.
But like Wendy's is like, hey, can we have your mom's phone number? And you're like, sure, Wendy's, you can have that for me.
As long as you give me a free nuggets.
Yeah, like, as long as you give me a free 99-cent spicy chicken nugget, I'll take it. Ugh. We have some listener questions today.
Let's do them.
These listener questions come from Manasi, one of our favorite listeners. She's the best. Thank you very much for sending these in. Question number one. What would you do if you learned that flies and spiders are sentient creatures that are scared when you approach them?
I think they are sentient.
Well, I think she means sentient to the degree of they can feel fear, you know?
Okay. They're like, they have people. In
yeah, they have like people. Well, maybe yeah. not in them, but yeah. You know
what yeah. I mean. They have like the minds of people and
yeah, would you fear change and complicated your approach emotions. To them?
Yeah.
Would you change the way you approach a spider or a fly?
I kind of already pretend that all animals have that.
Oh, that's so sweet. So I don't think I would change. And the only reason I don't think I would change is I would have to be aware all the time of these animals, of mm-hmm. these bugs. And it would be really hard to do. Because you don't know when you're near a spider or a fly until, like, yeah. they're right there. Right? And you're like, oh, my God, there's a fly right there. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I apologize when I kill spiders. But at the same time, like, I'll just kill one because they're in my way. Because it's,
I would probably stop killing them on a whim now. But I probably wouldn't, like, be like, oh, there's a fly there. I better be careful when I walk over there. You know what I mean?
The way I justify it is like, listen, it's worse for me if you're here, so I'm just going to kill you.
Wow. That's an ethical gray area. No, you're right.
Like, it's my space. Get out of it. Like, it's I know true. I know the spider can't possibly know that, but
he whatever. Should. She should. If you had to replace shoes with any vegetable to wear instead... Oh, let me start this off. If you had to replace shoes with any vegetable to wear instead, what would be the best replacement and what would be the worst? So the question is, if you couldn't wear shoes anymore and you had to wear a vegetable as shoes instead, what vegetable would you choose to wear? Let's say you can modify the vegetable slightly.
Okay. You can put some Velcro on it.
No outside things. You have to use the vegetable.
Okay.
You can't, like, tie it off with a bow or anything like that. You've got to use the vegetable.
I was thinking of something like a coconut because it's hard, but and it would, like, it's be
not
durable.
Really, not really a vegetable, but we can go. That's an acceptable answer.
Yeah, but, like, here's the thing. That would be really uncomfortable.
That would be a terrible shoe. This is what I'm thinking, okay?
Okay.
I'm thinking of a cucumber, but you slice it down the middle, and you wear it kind of like as a sandal kind of thing.
All right.
You know what I mean? Now, I don't know how I would attach it to my foot, though. that's the problem. Because, like, I would just be walking on a cucumber, and then it would flop off in, like, 5 seconds. So I don't know the solution there.
Okay, here's what you do. You kick a pumpkin so there's a hole in it.
Okay.
And then you just, there's your shoe.
There it is!
With all the gross, like... stuff inside.
You kick a pumpkin and then you're done. You would have two differently sized shoes too, because you'd kick two pumpkins, right?
Yeah.
So they'd both be like different. You'd try to pick two pumpkins that are similar size and shape. Have you ever thought about a pumpkin and like looking at a pumpkin and being like, yeah, I want to eat that?
No.
Like, it's gross in there. Like, I like pumpkins, but I would never have eaten a pumpkin unless I already knew it was something edible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that first person who ate a pumpkin wasn't really messing around. He was like, yeah, give me...
They were brave. Like, there's all these other fruits that look great, appetizing, like apples, oranges, bananas, you know.
Strawberries.
They look great. Strawberries, blueberries, they're like, oh, this is great, hell yeah. Guy looking at a pumpkin and he's like, oh, instead of that apple, I'm going to eat this mushy orange stuff.
Yeah,
it looks like it's someone's intestines. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But no, pumpkin might be the best answer we've got for the shoe question. It would be a little clunky. And it would make like a weird noise when you walked around. Like, and then, you know?
Yeah, it would probably break like almost immediately. I don't know if there's a good answer to this question.
I think it's pumpkin or cucumber. Yeah. I think cucumber could work. If you could figure the strap idea out, cucumber could work. Because once you slice a cucumber, it can be very flat, like a sandal. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you could like just lay it there, put your foot on it, and then strap it in somehow, and then you've got sandals, you know? Maybe you could use the skin of the cucumber to fashion like a strap.
Okay. Peel some of it and wrap it on your feet.
Yeah, you know?
Maybe. You know what this makes me think of? You know, like weird cultural traditions where maybe let's not like relate it to the real world. Maybe in Star Trek, there's an alien race where they have a funny vegetable that they wrap their feet with to like symbolize respect.
That's something. Yeah. That's like it
makes
that.
Me think of that. Yeah.
So something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it could go that way, you know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is our special wedding fruit. We have to voyage up into the mountains and pick
and
one.
Wrap
and
it shows on your feet. Commitment. Yeah, and wrap it on our feet and walk down the mountain with it on. That shows you're committed to our way of life or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's good. I can't think of any other vegetables. Carrots, no, too small. Tomatoes would be terrible.
Wouldn't work.
That'd be the worst. Lettuce, I mean, you could wrap your foot in lettuce, I guess.
Make a foot wrap.
Like, that would be like the hobo one to do, right? You're like, you take a head of lettuce, you just yank some lettuce off, and then you just wrap your foot in it.
How about this? How about like green onions? Because they're kind of durable. You could tie
they're
them.
They're long, though.
You like do knots all around your feet.
Okay, so you're tying like 50 green onions to your foot.
It might work.
Okay, yeah, no, I could see that. They'd probably break, but you could try
they
that.
Probably would.
Yeah. All right, I got some Reddits for you today.
Okay.
They're great today. And by great, I mean extremely mediocre. Do you have a one rule that you live your life by? Asks Knifefish on Reddit. I don't think I have one rule. My rule is don't be an asshole, I think, if I had to choose one.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
Yeah. That's
it. I don't have one rule. There's a bunch.
There's too many.
Yeah.
I'm going to rapid fire these questions. Okay. What smells make you happy? Asks
Laundry.
Megaline. Laundry, dirty or clean?
Both.
Really? Dirty laundry makes you happy?
Well, because, I mean, laundry never smells that bad if you're reasonable person.
Yes, that's fair.
How about just the laundry room smell?
Oh, the laundry room
has always made me happy.
That's a good smell. Yeah, I can see that. Mine is paper. I've told you this before. I love paper.
Yeah.
I don't know why I love the smell.
Paper's a good one.
This is a serious question only. Serious replies. Outside of your wedding and birth. What? Outside of your wedding. Oh, okay. I was going to say. outside of your wedding or birth of a child, what was the best day of your life and why? I read it as outside of your wedding or birth, what was the best day of your life? And I was like,
I
love
that day.
My birth. Yeah. My birth. It was so great. I loved it. It was a party. I remember it so well. So outside of your wedding or the birth of a child, what was the best day of your life and why?
That's hard to pick one. I've had some
Isn't
pretty good
hard?
Days.
I've had some good days. I mean, I've had more bad. Nope. I'm kidding. Or am I? Yeah, it's hard to pick. It's hard to narrow it down. The thing that's hard about this question is it's not most of the days that I would probably consider the best days. They're not milestone days where anything important happened. So like my mind doesn't make like a mental image of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't have like a strong memory or whatever.
I know what you mean. My memory doesn't work in blocks of days. They're more like kind of loose eras. Like I have favorite eras of my life.
Yeah. What's your favorite moment of your life? How about that?
Moment?
Like individual moment.
I don't know. I don't think about this. You know, the problem with this question
is not really hard.
Yeah, it's too hard. Because the problem with this question is, as soon as I say a moment, it's going to, like, diminish all the other moments.
No,
like,
you're right.
Oh, that one was the best.
You can do top five. Top five bat snacks moments. This is like a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Top five moments of my life. Number one. When I watched Star Wars for this, I don't know.
What that was a good one. That was a really good one.
Uh-huh. See, I can guess. No, I can't.
Yeah, you probably know every single one of them.
Honestly. Really? I don't think I do.
Well, you were probably there for a lot of them.
Really? What's another?
Yeah, honestly.
Star Wars. Watching Star Wars for the first time. That's a good moment. It's got to be up there.
That's probably the only movie that's part of the top five, too.
Sure, sure. Number four. What? Getting an A in science. No, I don't know.
That's yeah, you know me. I love school.
I love grades.
Nothing better than getting an A.
I don't know what mine would be, but this is a dumb question. I'm moving on. If everyone in the world... This is so bad. If everyone in the world took a shit in the Grand Canyon, how long would it take to fill up to the top? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Too many, okay? That's the answer to that question. Your friend set you up on a blind date, but you don't want it to work out. I don't know why you'd not. What subtle changes to your personality and behavior can you make that aren't obvious that you're trying to turn them off? So you're on a blind date. You don't really want to be there. You want to go because your friend set you up. But you want to get out of the date without seeming like a total asshole. What do you do? So, like, you have to go to the date.
Yeah.
And you don't want this person to like you, essentially.
Yeah. And let's just say, because this will make it... realer, like, you don't want to hurt their feelings because they probably know your friends.
You want them to think that, like, okay, this just isn't compatible. We're not compatible.
And then leave it at that.
I would go just boring, you know. I would talk about things that I don't think the other person would like.
Yeah.
That I pretend to be interested in. Or maybe I am interested and I don't normally talk about them because they're boring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is I would just be myself because there's no way that's going to work.
That's depressing.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
There's someone out there for you. That's
no, here's
what
I would
do.
If you
want to go on a date with Bass Next, call 1-888, go on a date, time patch up. No, I'm just kidding. What were you going
to
say?
Here's what you have to do. You have to tell them right away that you're not looking for a relationship. That's a good way to kill the evening.
Wow.
Just be like, hey, let's just hang out. We're already here.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to...
You're bad at those. I don't think that's good. I don't think that's good because I think they'll interpret that as, like, you seeing them and being like, oh, they're ugly. I need to get out of this right now.
No, that's not what it would be at all.
You don't think so? Okay.
Well, here, you don't have to say it directly, but you can give off that vibe. That's a very easy vibe to give off, that you're just unavailable.
Like, I'm not looking for anything serious right now.
Yeah, like, you don't have to say it directly, but
like, it'll come up in the conversation. Like, what are you doing or whatever? And you're like, oh, you know, I'm not really looking for anything serious, just kind of chilling out kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
You can seem disinterested in relationships. Not disinterested in the person, but in relationships. Okay. See, that's a good answer. That's a very, very good.
It's you know, you can still engage with them and have fun and all that, but when it comes to, like, talking, because that always comes up on dates, it's like, oh, what are you like in a relationship?
Right.
And you can just cut them off.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah. What do you look for in music? Burn it for me. Burn it for me. What do you look for in music? We were just talking about music.
Music?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this recently.
What are you here for?
So I see you post a lot about music on Twitter.
And music's really important to you. About music on Twitter, I feel.
No,
like
you don't.
I feel like I do.
No, it's what you like, so it's what you should do.
Music is the only thing that I like. I've come to that realization as I've aged. Like, I don't really like anything. I like people. Some people, right? Like you and a couple other people. And music, and yeah, that's about it. You know what I mean?
And that's cool, and you should continue to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But For me, I don't, not to sound like a weirdo, but like I don't like music that much.
Uh-huh.
Not as much as you.
Or, sure.
My taste in music is, I don't usually like one type of music or one song or band or whatever for like a long time. Yeah, my taste in music is fleeting. It doesn't stay the same. And I usually just pick stuff that sounds different from what I'm used to hearing.
Is it a mood thing for you? Or is it more of like, oh, this is different than what I normally listen to?
Kind of. It's definitely a mood thing, too.
Okay, yeah. So it's like, this is like sad, or this is happy, or this is weird, or this is, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I don't usually like to listen to music when I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my music listening emotions are, I'm angry, I want to be like, rah,
sure.
Or I'm really sad.
Uh-huh.
Or I'm, like, trying to get hyped up about something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or
angry, I think that's it. Sad, or hyped. Those are your music emotions.
Yeah. Or my I'm trying to clear my mind. Yeah,
my music emotions are all sad adjacent, I feel like. So I was thinking about this recently. This has nothing to do with music. But we have so many different words for sad and only, like, a couple for happy. Have you noticed that? Like, we've got happy and, like, ecstatic. And then, like, psyched, I guess. And for sad, we've got sad. We've got down, blue. And then there's, like, emotion, like different emotions for sadness, right? Like, defeated. Disappointed.
Abject.
Yeah, abject. Bored.
Dismal.
Bored isn't really sad. Dismal, yeah. Like, there's so many different words for... nostalgic, you know, that's kind of sadness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Disaffected, you know, like there's so many different words for sadness. And they don't all mean sadness. They're like a different take on it or whatever. Anyway, all the music I listen to is like, they're all different colors of that emotion. Usually, not all the time. So it's either happy, you know, happy, like I'm in a good mood music. But I'm never, like, looking for, like, happy music. I'm always looking for, like, what's the word? Like, bright, I guess you would say. Like, it's well-meaning. It's not, like, fun. It's, like, you know, enjoy.
Would you say uplifting?
Uplifting. Maybe? That's the word. Yes. Uplifting music, A. And then sad, but not, like, I want to kill myself sad. More like, you know, like longing or nostalgic or, you know, like unfulfilled. That's a big one. Ooh, that's a good word for sad, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
That's like, those are the kinds of music that really, ooh, that really gets me right there. That really hits me right in the place, you know?
So. I have a theory about music. Mm-hmm. I think people like to listen to music that they feel like they could make.
I think that might be true.
Because I don't like... This is going to make me sound petty, but I don't like to listen to music that's too good.
Because you're like, I couldn't do this.
Think about something like... Maybe pop music might be a good example.
Yeah.
You need 100 people.
At least.
All have insane specialized techniques to make a pop song.
You're right.
But something like just a guy just droning away on a guitar in front of a campfire, you badly recorded.
You can do it too. Who's our sponsor today, Bassnex?
Our sponsor today is Tumbling anymore. Frog. Can you hear me?
Tumbling Frog. Yeah, when you're in the mood to tumble a frog, choose Tumbling Frog. I don't know what that means, but there you go. Remember, when you're feeling kind of down... you're cutting out.
Turn that.
I'm going to assume you said, don't forget to frown.
Thank you.
Oh, that's good. All right. Good night, everyone. Drive safely. Bye.
Bye.